Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gloria LaRiva. I'm from the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. And the purpose of our press conference is to announce a lawsuit that's been filed on our behalf by the Partnership for Civil Justice. And our speakers today will be Mara Verheyden Hilliard of the Partnership for Civil Justice and myself. September 12th will mark the 11th anniversary of the arrest of the Cuban Five in Miami, who remain unjustly in prison to this day. Their convictions and the outrageous sentences after their trial, the sentences including four life terms, 77 years, came in the midst of a highly prejudicial anti-Cuba atmosphere in Miami. The media played a key role in fostering this hostile environment, the Miami media, with the flood of articles and broadcast coverage that could only have happened in that city on an issue involving Cuba. So several years after the Cuban Five's convictions, which took place on June 8, 2001, it was revealed that a number of Miami reporters were on the payroll of the U.S. government through the Office of Cuba Broadcasting and the Broadcasting Board of Governors. At least several of them were paid during the time of the Five's detention and trial and wrote articles or covered the case of the Five. This first discovery came through the Freedom of Information Act by Oscar Corral of the Miami Herald in 2006, because we believe that there was far more influenced by the U.S. government through the pay of other journalists, as well as those who were discovered in 2006. The National Committee to Free the Cuban Five filed a Freedom of Information Act request of the Broadcasting Board of Governors and the Office of Cuba Broadcasting on January 23, 2009. After a delay in receiving information, the board gave us a limited list of information of journalists, both those who were revealed in the 2006 FOIA and also others who were uncovered through our request. However, after requesting more information that is necessary for what we believe is important research into the full role of the Miami media in creating this hysteria against the Cuban Five, the BBG and the OCB have refused to give us any more information. And this is why we have filed the lawsuit today. Now to speak will be Mara Verheyden Hilliard of the Partnership for Civil Justice, which is one of the leading civil rights legal organizations in the country, and which is our which are our attorneys in this matter. Please, if you could speak now, Mara.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am, as Gloria said, Mara Verheyden Hilliard. I'm co-founder with Carl Massinio of the Partnership for Civil Justice and the attorney on this case. We have brought this litigation on behalf of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five because we believe it raises very major and significant issues in terms of government misconduct on multiple fronts. What has happened is the National Committee has uncovered that there are journalists in Miami who are on the payroll of the U.S. government during the period from the arrest to the conviction of the Cuban Five. These are journalists who have written incendiary and false reporting about Cuba as well as about the Cuban Five. The National Committee to Free the Five has sought specific information, in particular a series of contracts, dozens and dozens of contracts that they have identified that the BBG engaged in with these named journalists. The BBG has refused to provide that information. They are unlawfully withholding the contracts. The contracts, many of them have been identified by name of journalist, by contract number, by date, and yet they are refusing to produce them. They have sought for 8 months and gone through every avenue of appeal to get this information. And fundamentally, the issues that are implicated here involve whether or not the U.S. government, as it appears that they were, covertly paid journalists who wrote stories related to the case or about Cuban relations that were likely to reach and influence both the jury pool in Miami and the seated jury, while the U.S. simultaneously carried out prosecutions of the Cuban Five. If the U.S. government engaged in a covert operation of this nature, that would have affected a fair trial. It raises questions of government misconduct, whether the prosecutions were tainted by this activity that is poisoning the jury pool. The U.S. government cannot simultaneously, covertly pay journalists to write negative stories who are writing negative stories, funding those journalists who are writing about Cuba, who are writing about the Cuban Five, while they are prosecuting the Cuban Five in Miami, when everyone recognizes at this point the hysteria, the atmosphere, the poisoned atmosphere with regard to that trial. And to know that that was being funded by the U.S. government is a major, major development. The second issue here is that the Broadcasting Board of Governors is barred by law from using its funding to influence U.S. public opinion. Under the Smith-Mundt Act, the U.S. government and BBG may not engage in domestic propaganda operations. They may not create or fund propaganda vehicles that are intended and will reach a U.S. audience. There is no explanation that the BBG has given that is a legitimate basis for withholding these contracts. I think the fact that they are withholding these contracts only makes the situation more damning.
Our first question comes from Laura White Munoz. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have two questions. My first question is, the BBG, by nature, is a government-run organization, so anyone who has a contract with them, anyone who is reporting for them, obviously is government paid. There's nothing covert about that. So I'm wondering why the importance is to get the individual contracts of the individuals who were reporting for them at that time. My other question is, the reports from the BBG, that is Cuba Broadcasting Radio, Martí, TV Martí, are for a foreign audience, and while now you can get them on internet, I don't know if that was possible back then, and they were going abroad at that time, not locally. So I'm wondering how you can see that they were used to influence local opinion. So those are my two questions.
This is Mara Verheyden Hilliard. To begin with the first question, indeed this is covert. These are journalists who were not identifying themselves as being on the payroll of the BBG, as best as we can tell, or that has been identified. These are journalists who assert themselves as being independent journalists who are reporting on Cuba and or the Cuban Five. This is not, we're not talking about the anchors that appear on TV Martí or something like that, people that are obviously in the payroll of the U.S. government carrying out the BBG's propaganda efforts. We're talking about reporters and journalists who assert and put forward the pretense that they are neutral or independent. I think that any journalist on this call would recognize that you are either freelancing or being paid by the news entity which hosts you, not by a government.
But any of those journalists who were reporting for the government, who were paid by the government, at some point were doing work that showed up in the Martí or the...
How do you know that? I mean, I'm not sure what the basis is for your assertion. What we have is lists of journalists by name who were being paid by the BBG, but who were also reporting ostensibly as if they were neutral or independent reporters. And that raises really substantial questions that go to your second question, which has to do with the assertion that the BBG is, in fact, broadcasting for a foreign audience. The BBG is, in fact, producing material and broadcasts that affect much of southern Florida. But indeed, here's the question. You have reporters that are publishing in newspapers and broadcast media that is not listed as being a BBG publication, and yet they're receiving cash from the U.S. government without disclosure. And that, in fact, would be paying journalists who were producing materials for domestic consumption, and the contracts, which the BBG is for some reason afraid and unwilling to produce, may shed greater light on that. But the fact is, despite repeated and repeated requests, they're refusing to produce these contracts. And we know the contracts exist. We have them by contract number. We have them by date. Dozens of contracts where they're paying journalists during this period from the arrest to the conviction of the Cuban Five.
So you have the amount that they were being paid and the contract number?
Go ahead, Gloria.
Yeah, we have an initial list of what they were being paid. We submitted a list of 33 journalists
mm-hmm.
because at the first the BBG said that it was our request was too extensive and in the interest of resolving some of these key journalist names, we submitted 33 names and 17 came back. Some of the amounts include Pablo Alfonso, who received $253,300. He was paid from what we see now, November 99, although he could have been paid earlier. This is some of the information we're seeking. Wilfredo Cancio Isla, as of March, was paid $21,800. And I think one of his articles, I'd like to point out, was extremely damaging and a fantasy story. Of unquoted or unnamed anonymous people who were making outrageous accusations on the very day that the jury went to deliberations on June 4th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And without any substantiation, he quotes an unnamed so-called Cuban defector and who mentions the Cuban Five. And we believe that the intent of that article was to cast fear in the jury, to the people reading the media on that day after the arguments were already concluded in the trial. This is just one example. Other amounts of money that certain journalists were paid include Enrique Encinosa, who openly calls for terrorist attacks, by the way, on Cuba. And he's a reporter on Miami radio and television. He received $10,400, including during the trial. Others who were discovered from our Freedom of Information were Alejandro Armengol, $11,600. So there's a lot of information on this. We are going to also submit a more extensive list of other journalists who were writing during that time, including about the Cuban Five. So this is just the beginning of an investigation. And
as an example, with regard to some of the supposedly independent journalists that Gloria LaRiva has mentioned, Pablo Alfonso, there are 41 contracts that are minimally that were signed with the BBG solely in the period of the prosecution of the Cuban Five. Mm-hmm. That's 41 contracts that the BBG is withholding. With regard to Wilfredo Cancio, there are minimally 7 contracts that the BBG is withholding, that we have specifically identified and requested.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Andres Viglucci. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, have you actually filed the complaint at this point, and are copies available?
Yes, the complaint has been filed. And copies are available on the website of the Partnership for Civil Justice, which is justiceonline.org, as well as on the website of the National Committee to Free the Five, which is freethefive.org, and there are PDF copies available.
Okay. And are you making public, either as part of the complaint or separately, a full list of the 17 journalists?
I believe Ms. LaRiva can do that. It is not listed in the complaint, although it will, I'm sure, end up being part of the public record.
Yes,
okay.
We will be listing the names later today. Not all of them are journalists because we had submitted some names. For example, Jose Basulto, which we submitted because we were frankly curious about whether he was being paid. He is the head of Brothers to the Rescue, as you know. However, he had a very interesting role during the time of the Elian situation in 1999 and 2000, at the same time that the Cuban Five were in prison in Miami. And it was the contention of those who support the Cuban Five that the hysteria that was generated in Miami around Elian had a big effect on the publicity of the five, on the sentiments in the Miami community towards the five who were in detention. And Jose Basulto, who was the head of Brothers to the Rescue and was very much related to the case of the five, and Ramon Saul Sanchez from the Democracy Movement were virtual spokespeople on the media in Miami. In addition to the local media, they were on CNN, they were on Fox TV. So they had the effective role of speaking, commenting on the Elian situation, saying that the boy would not be returned to Cuba. And so at the same time, they were also identified with the case of the Cuban Five. And those, all of that is so linked together. To answer Laura Wiedes's question, and you're from Associated Press, there is no other city in the United States where the Office of Cuba Broadcasting and the BBG play the role that it plays with regards to the media. And if you look at the media who is paid, it's Cuban journalists. And so they're drawing from a group of people in Miami who are known extensively in the Miami community, especially the Latino community, on a daily basis, on TV, radio, newspaper. And so it's a mirror coverage. It's like reflected in Miami, it's reflected in what they try to broadcast into Cuba. And so it's an inseparable role of the U.S. government, which is prosecuting the five and paying these journalists.
If I could ask a follow-up?
Yes.
When you refer to contracts, I'm trying to understand exactly what those are. Are they per story? Are they for a specific time of work? Or how are those set up? Have you been able to ascertain that?
That's what we would like to find out, because they won't give us the contracts. So what we know is, and Ms. Larriva may have more to add, but what we have been able to identify, what the Freedom of Five has identified to this point, is we have names, in some cases names, contract numbers, and a date. So without seeing, we can't see the underlying substance of the contract. Assumably, you know, each one of these is identifying some activity, whether or not it, you know, has a particular activity, like we would like you to write a particular article. You know, I would not assume that, but it obviously must indicate some work for payment.
And just to clarify, then you submitted a list of 33. 17 came back as having done some work for these government entities, and with some amounts and dollar figures attached to them.
And we will post that information. We will post some initial information, although we really don't have enough based on the figures of what the payment was for. I mean, there's some of where you can see that some were paid small amounts for appearances, but others were paid more significant amounts for research, for commentary, for a more extensive role. But it's still very vague.
One more, if I may. You did refer to Jose Basulto and Ramon Saul. Did it turn out? What came back in regard to them?
No, Basulto was just given a small amount for, I think, two appearances.
Okay.
The other is that even though we need to have this information on the contracts, the detailed information, the fact that nobody ever knew that they were being paid, and that in the Miami Herald, that the editors did not know that they were being paid. And again, something that could only happen in Miami, when the editor, on the day of the publishing of the article by Oscar Corral on September 8, 2006, he fired the three reporters, including Pablo Alfonso and Wilfredo Cancio Isla. And then the next day, he was fired. The editor was fired, and the three were rehired. And that is an extreme violation of journalistic ethics and supposed independence of the media.
Our next question comes from Andrea Sears. Please go ahead.
You said that the articles influenced the seated jury. Was the jury not sequestered? Were they allowed access to media?
No, the jury was not sequestered. The jury was not only not sequestered, but they were also followed by some of the Miami media, the Spanish language media, which was extremely aggressive during trial. And it was noted near the conclusion of the trial that in one particular day, they were followed to their cars, the jury, as they were going home. They were followed to their cars by the TV, which was filming their license plates and generally harassing them. There is a history in Miami of the same television stations after filming people's license plates, then putting the names, addresses, phone numbers of people who have either attended an event supporting normalization of relations between the U.S. and Cuba, in which there's a virtual call for violence against them. And when people's information has been broadcast on these TV stations, they've had to go into hiding, move. It's a terror campaign by some of this media. So, in fact, not only was the jury not sequestered, but there were also many comments in the selection of the jury, from the jury pool, of comments of fear by some of the people who said, I'm afraid if there would be a verdict of innocent, you know what happens in Miami.
Our next question comes from Laura Wides Munoz. Please go ahead.
Oh, and excuse me, can people identify their media affiliation, please?
Hi, yes, I'm with the Associated Press. Just wanted to follow. I believe that when the individuals were fired at the Herald, and I'm sure others on the phone can correct me if I'm wrong, it did turn out that actually the editors had been aware, perhaps not the one who fired them, but the other editors had been aware. It was standard practice, and they had been aware that they were working, that they were also doing freelance for the Martis. And so I was wondering, the practice that you're talking about is just in terms, when you said it was ethical, I didn't know if you were referring to the fact that they were simply freelancing for the federal government while working as independent journalists, or that the person who fired them was fired.
Both that they were being paid, and it wasn't common knowledge. You yourself are saying the editor who fired them did not know that they were being paid.
But other editors there did and had approved it.
Well, that may be. That's the Miami Herald, and that's the Nuevo Herald. Because the editors were also publishing very, very incendiary editorials against the five during their detention and during the trial. So, but the other part is, in the time of the discovery in 2006, heads of journalist associations were commenting on how it was a real violation of journalistic independence and ethics.
Our next question comes from Eduardo Suno from ABC News. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I had a couple of questions. I'm just trying to understand, first, if these reporters, you say that they have an influence in the jury and in the community, how can you separate what they say when they were in front of TV Marti and what they wrote for their own newspaper?
Well, one, we don't know in terms of the nature of what they were doing, whether or not we can simply say, well, they happen to just be in front of TV Marti and also were writing for a newspaper and being paid for one thing but not another. But the other is, I think you have to step back and look at the fact that if you have a journalist who, you know, purports and appears to be an independent journalist writing for a newspaper or other media outlet, but is taking money from the U.S. government, and in some cases substantial sums, but money at all from the U.S. government, and not disclosing that while they're commenting on foreign policy matters or the trial or prosecution, that the U.S. government is carrying out, that would be improper. That would be poisoning the well, so to speak. And for these journalists to be accepting money from the U.S. government, and not just the U.S. government, but more specifically from the propaganda arm of the U.S. government, that is barred by law from seeking to place propaganda or influence U.S. public opinion, that's even more problematic. And here you have what, you know, some people have referred to in the original, you know, three-judge panel of the Conservative Court of Appeals to the 11th Circuit, you know, everyone referred to as really a perfect storm of prejudice in Miami. I think that was accurate. That was a fair assertion. While the rest of the U.S. media has practically never covered the Cuban Five, in Miami, there was constant and extensive coverage of the Cuban Five, except that it was incendiary, it was false, it necessarily had an impact on the jury pool, and quite likely had an impact on the seated jury. And to the extent that the people who were writing those materials were also receiving cash from the same U.S. government that was prosecuting the Cuban Five, the U.S. public has a right to know it. And we've sought this information, we sought it under the Federal Freedom of Information Act, and yet the BBG is refusing to produce it. And you have to ask, why are they refusing to produce it? They are obligated by law to make this material available, and they are withholding it.
I just have another question, if you don't mind. What are you trying to achieve? Is there anything to do this related to the fact that three of the five Cubans are now in Miami?
No. We do not represent any of the Cuban Five. What we're doing is seeking public disclosure of this information. We believe the public has a right to know whether or not, you know, their attorneys, you know, have use for the information in some way. You would have to speak with their attorneys. But we think that the information is critical. We think it's important that it come out. And we think that you must have transparency in government. You must have clarity and transparency about the conduct of the government. And that's not happening here. That's why we've gone to court to force these disclosures.
Thank you so much.
Excuse me. If you want more information on some of what took place at the time of the 2006 Freedom of Information and the discovery of the Miami Herald and Herald reporters, including Olga Conor, there's an article on our website, freethefive.org, and along the left, it's got a little star on it, some of the commentary that was at that time. And, for example, the president of the Miami Herald Media Company said that the payments violated a sacred trust between the journalists and the public. And then the executive director at that time of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists said it's definitely a line that journalists shouldn't be crossing. It's clear the medium has a particular agenda. If they cover Cuba issues, it could be seen as a conflict. So these are just some of the comments that took place. And the executive editor of the Nuevo Herald did not know. He said he had not known, and they were dismissed immediately. However, I think he was the one who was fired the next day.
This is Bonnie Dwyer from Radio Havana, Cuba. I would like to ask that since the disclosure of this particular, I'll call it an outrage. I'm just wondering, what has the reaction of the mainstream press in the United States been? Are they anxious to know more, or are they putting out headlines about it?
Well, there's a good amount of media right now on our press conference, and we have received a number of appointments today for interviews with radio in particular. There's a wide range of interest. There's interest, and I think that the interest will grow more with respect to more information that we uncover. And there was...
Could I just ask a... Hello?
No, I'm sorry, yes?
Can I ask another question, please? I was wondering, I think maybe this question might have been touched on, but is these disclosures, would they have any effect on, for instance, would they be shown as being prejudicial in the case of the five? In other words, that maybe they did attempt, or they did influence the jury or influence the reportage on the case of the five?
Well, we believe that the issue that's been raised here and what's been put before the federal court in regards to the demand for disclosure of this information has significant implications as to whether the U.S. government was simultaneously paying journalists in Miami who were representing themselves as independent, not disclosing they were paid by the propaganda arm of the U.S. government, who were writing negative articles about Cuba and or the Cuban Five, while the U.S. was simultaneously prosecuting the Cuban Five and doing this covertly, in as much as there was not public disclosure that these activities were simultaneously being carried out. Now, we are not attorneys for the Cuban Five, so I could not answer, you know, the specifics of that question in terms of what implications the information may have or potentially may have with regard to their current situation. But their attorneys would, you know, be able to answer that.
I'll comment on it also. I agree very much with what Mara for Hayden has said about the attorneys have their own work and legal work and so on, and we operate independently because ours, the National Committee, our goal is in helping to free them in along with an international movement that's on their behalf. But certainly the media was so critical that the defense attorneys during trial submitted quite a lot of articles, not only related to the five's arrest and their charges, but also other issues related to Cuba to show that it was a whole general atmosphere about the Elian situation and so forth. But while they were submitting these articles, nobody but the government and some of these journalists had any idea the role of the government, and the government had an obligation to disclose this. And it was part of just one more facet of the very unfair advantage that denied the five complete, it denied them the right to due process. It was a complete denial of their right as they sought to have a change of venue. And it's interesting because the attorneys at one point, they were asking for a change of venue just 25 miles away in Fort Lauderdale, because the hysteria was far, far less in that city, according to a poll that they had done. But the court refused. And if this knowledge of the government's pain, the journalists who the defense was trying to show had such a big effect was known, we believe it could have had, it could have changed the outcome of the trial. And so we don't know exactly what this information, the role that this information, this new discovery will play, but our intent is to do more research, to submit more names and more demand of the OCB and the BBG, as well as raising the issue of the Cuban Five's unjust imprisonment. We believe they should never have been arrested. They were on a mission in Miami to uncover plots of terrorism, which they were very successful at. And we believe that's why they're in prison, because they were successfully stopping the terrorist activity, which is so well known around the world, that is based in Miami against Cuba.
Bueno, entiendo bastante lo que han estado comunicando. Me parece sumamente importante que se haga esta demanda. Creo que uno de los factores fundamentales que está en la base de la injusticia acumulada contra los cinco en Estados Unidos tiene que ver con la manera en que fue manejado el caso en la prensa de Miami.
Sí.
Y lo que sí me gustaría saber en qué medida esta demanda podría también contribuir a que el proceso contra los cinco termine de esclarecerse finalmente, se haga justicia y pueda desembarazarse toda la maraña que se ha tejido en torno a estos hombres que lo único que hacían era infiltrar grupos terroristas para evitar sus acciones contra nuestro pueblo y contra el propio pueblo norteamericano.
Okay, the question is, I believe that it's very important that that this lawsuit is taking place, and I think that one of the factors, one of the key factors that brought about the injustice for the Cuban Five was the role that the Miami media had to do with how they covered the Cuban Five case. And excuse me for the translation, but you were asking to what degree could the lawsuit affect the legal process of the Five in finally clarifying the terrorism in Miami and bringing about justice for the Five. Arlene, yo creo que de eso ya se preguntó más de una vez, y lo que Mara ha dicho es que no se puede. Mara, if you want to answer in English and I can translate?
Sure.
Okay.
When the trial took place in the United States of the Cuban Five, which...
Durante el juicio de los cinco en los Estados Unidos.
The government was obligated by law to have a fair trial. They were obligated by law to allow the Cuban Five a fair defense and the right to a fair jury. And it has been widely recognized that that did not happen.
El gobierno tenía la obligación por la ley de garantizar un juicio imparcial, de otorgar una defensa justa, un jurado imparcial, y eso no pasó. Eso no sucedió.
What has been recognized is that the Cuban Five, who should never have been invited to begin with, were put on trial in a location in Miami where the U.S. government knew it would be what the appellate court referred to as a perfect storm in terms of hostility towards their case.
Los cinco fueron puestos bajo un juicio en una sede que es Miami, en donde el gobierno estadounidense supo lo que iba a pasar, que fue lo que la Corte de Apelaciones dijo, que es una tormenta perfecta en términos de la hostilidad hacia su caso.
Now it appears that many journalists who have written incendiary and false articles about Cuba and the Cuban Five have received payments from the official propaganda agency of the U.S. government.
Ahora, se ha descubierto que muchos periodistas que escribieron artículos incendiary y falsos sobre Cuba y los cinco cubanos han y habían recibido pago de la agencia oficial de propaganda del gobierno de los Estados Unidos.
We are seeking the documents underlying these actions by the U.S. government and the BBG. But we believe that it is critical for this information to be revealed to fully understand the level of the miscarriage of justice in the case of the Cuban Five.
Okay. Estamos buscando los documentos que enseñan las acciones del gobierno de los Estados Unidos y la Junta de Gobernadores de Transmisiones. Pero, y creemos que es imprescindible que esta información sea divulgada completamente para entender realmente el nivel de la injusticia contra los cinco.
Sí, Gloria.
Sí.
Me gustaría también agradecer el trabajo que están haciendo ustedes, que el trabajo de la abogada Mara y del Comité Free the Fight, porque esto no solo es una contribución al esclarecimiento de la verdad, creo que también es una importante contribución a que no se siga con total impunidad utilizando el periodismo para hacer guerra sucia contra Cuba y contra el mejoramiento, el posible mejoramiento de las relaciones entre nuestros dos países. Creo que esa prensa ha jugado un rol muy negativo durante años, que ha contribuido a crear un clima negativo entre nuestros países, y creo que una demanda como esta demuestra y enseña que no se puede actuar con impunidad, o que no debería actuarse con impunidad, porque se daña a muchas personas y se daña a dos pueblos que hace mucho tiempo debían entenderse, si tenemos en cuenta que tienen un sentido igual de la justicia.
So Arlene Rodriguez, ¿para quién estás reportando? Arlene?
¿Yo? Sí, para la mesa redonda, Juan Cables.
So, Arlene Rodriguez is reporting for the round table of Cuban TV, and I'm just translating. She says, I want to express appreciation for the work that you have done of both Mara Fed Hayden and of the Free the Five Committee, because not only is a clarification of the truth, but it's an important contribution so that there not be a continued impunity of those who carry out a dirty war against Cuba, and to help in the betterment of relations between the two countries. The press has played a very negative role for years that has created a negative situation between the people of Cuba and the United States. And the lawsuit shows, or it should show, that one should not be able to operate with impunity because it damages relations between the two people. Gracias, Arlene.
Gracias a ustedes, Gloria. Gracias.
You know, in response to one of the questions about the jury and whether it was sequestered, not only was it not sequestered and, you know, subject or, you know, possibly exposed to the media, which was all around them when they went home. And this was a 7-month trial, by the way. It was 7 months that this trial took place, and it had extensive coverage in Miami. But also, in one particular article that appeared in the Miami Herald of April 19th, and 2001, before the trial ended, and that was when the jury was taken out of the courtroom so that they would not hear the discussions between the judge and the prosecution and defense. And this was when the Cuban attorneys, I mean the Cuban five defense attorneys, had requested to go back to Cuba for another trip to take more testimony from witnesses. And the prosecution claimed that what the attorneys were going to do was go back to Cuba, and that Cuba was going to give them a manipulated story to bring back into the trial. Now, obviously, this was not for the ears of the jury, but in fact, it was reported fully in the Herald. And that's why, and this was written by Wilfredo Cancio Isla, again, who was receiving monies at the time. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Our next question comes from Laura Wides Munoz from Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, thanks for hearing me again. I just have one last question. I understand that the committee itself, I'm sorry, yes, so the committee is the named plaintiff in this suit, but then you were saying that the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund does not represent the Cuban Five. However, if it's representing the committee, then in a sense it is. I guess I'm a little confused as to whether
I can probably help clarify that.
Okay, and then my other question, just real quick, is you're obviously asking, you know, for the documents to be turned over, but I would ask the Committee for the Cuban Five, they would be turned over toward what end in the end? I know that obviously the resentencing is coming up, but if you can show that they did in fact, or suggest that they did in fact sway, unfairly sway the jury, what would you try to use that to do for the five? Okay, so thank you.
The Cuban Five are specifically, they have attorneys who represent them, and our organization is not, we're not counsel on their case. We don't represent them. So there are a group of attorneys who, you know, have litigated their case, defended their cases for years up the appellate courts, up to the Supreme Court and down. And so we're not counsel. So we do not speak on behalf of the Cuban Five, of the five men, or their attorneys at all. So that when we're being asked questions about how will could the Cuban Five use this, or, you know, that kind of information, I don't have an answer, because I don't know, you know, the thinking of the attorneys or their plans or, you know, what they're contemplating.
Okay, but they are the plaintiff in the case, National Committee to Free the Cuban Five.
No, the Cuban Five are not plaintiffs in this case at all. The National Committee to Free the Cuban Five is a solidarity organization. It's an organization that works with groups all over the United States and all over the country who believe that the Cuban Five were unjustly indicted, unjustly convicted, unjustly imprisoned. So they stand in support and in solidarity of the Cuban Five, but they're not them themselves. So none of us would speak on behalf of those men and, you know, or their attorneys' intentions. But that's not to say that the National Committee does not support and seek justice in their case. They do.
So the National Committee did not have an aim in terms of what it would like to do with the contracts if they came back. I mean, obviously, the end goal is not just to get them. The end goal is to help these guys. So how could that be of use? Gloria.
Yeah, I think Gloria can answer that. But I just was trying to clarify the technical point, because the Cuban Five themselves are not plaintiffs in this case, and nor are their attorneys involved in this, nor are we involved in their case. But certainly the National Committee is in solidarity with getting justice in their case.
I will make that clear. Okay. Thanks.
Yes, well, the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five was formed in June of 2001 after they were convicted, and we've always maintained a completely independent position in our work. Our motivation is that we believe these men were saving lives, not just Cuban, although that's very important, but also anybody who would be a victim of terrorism, because terrorism strikes at whoever happens to be walking by in a hotel lobby, like what killed Fabio Di Chelmo in Havana, or anybody who would be boarding a plane. And so our interest in the United States is seeing that any defendant receive a fair trial free of prejudice, prejudicial coverage, and a prejudicial atmosphere which exists in Miami. The other is that we believe that ultimately it is the pressure of the public and the people who learn about the case of the five that will help free them. There is a complete legal process taking place. The attorneys will be continuing their legal battle, but ours is winning public opinion and, first of all, knowledge about the five being in prison fighting terrorism.
Our next question comes from Andres Viglucci from the Miami Herald. Please go ahead.
I'm trying to further clarify what you're saying for myself here. Are you suggesting that some of these journalists were paid by the U.S. government not beyond doing appearances or stories for Radio Marti or TV Marti, but may, are you suggesting they may have been paid for articles that appeared in their own media, local media here in Miami? And do you have evidence for this, or is this something you suspect at this point, and that perhaps these records would help clarify?
Well, the records would certainly provide some amount of information, but as I said earlier, it is not the expectation, nor is it even necessary, that a contract is going to show or, you know, contracting with you a sum certain for you to write a particular article and publish it in a particular newspaper. And I think the issue is that you have journalists who are asserting that they are independent journalists who are purportedly reporting in some, you know, neutral facts in some neutral fashion, which, you know, in fact did not occur, and were simultaneously receiving funds from the U.S. government, not just the U.S. government, but specifically the propaganda arm of the U.S. government, and they were not disclosing that. I think if a reporter is receiving money from the VBG and simultaneously is a reporter who is publishing in or broadcasting in the United States, not disclosing that, particularly in this situation where the U.S. government was simultaneously prosecuting the Cuban Five and paying reporters who were writing about Cuba and the Cuban Five in this extreme atmosphere, poisoning the atmosphere in Miami beyond what it already was, that raises major implications of this conduct.
Well, I understand that broad issue, and I think it's certainly come up before. I guess I'm trying to establish whether you're saying at this point there may be, it may go beyond that, something that arguably could raise also a separate list of concerns, if they're being paid specifically to publish in domestic media, that is, beyond making appearances on Radio Martí, which we know did occur.
Well, you know what's very interesting is that it is widely known, especially through the investigations and the studies on the audience of Radio and TV Martí. Ostensibly, it's directed against Cuba, and of course, for our organization, we are not for the operation of Radio and TV Martí at all. We think that Cuba has a right to its sovereignty and to have its airwaves generated from its own country. But anyway, it's widely known that virtually nobody listens or watches Radio or TV Martí in Cuba. The audience is virtually zero. And so when you think about it, the audience is actually more in Miami. And therefore, what is the role of Radio and TV Martí except to be part of the nourishing of a whole base of journalists, Cuban journalists, in Miami? In fact, Pedro Roig, who is the director of the Office of Cuba Broadcasting since 2003, said that, among other things, he's looking to hire more Cuban exiled journalists. He wants, in other words, to strengthen that practice, which is highly, not only unethical, but illegal. And you have to understand that the media, which broadcasts thousands of hours into Cuba through other means, including, for example, one of the journalists that we discovered, Enrique Encinosa, had as late as early as the early 1990s and 1994, he had a radio station operating from Miami that supposedly got around the prohibitions of what he was doing. He has this pirate radio station where he calls on Cubans to carry out terrorist activities inside the island. And he's seen on documentaries calling, saying that the bombings, hotel bombings in 1997 were a good thing. He is on the government payroll. So it's much more than just hostile media coverage. It's an industry in Miami that helps to nourish and keep and sustain and maintain a terrorist network inside Miami against Cuba.
The Office of Cuban Broadcasting has spent approximately $500 million in U.S. taxpayer funds on these activities. They run about approximately $35 million a year. It's a very significant funding stream that is pouring out of them and clearly into the pockets of some number of Miami journalists, quote-unquote journalists. So I think that, again, it goes, your question goes back to the fundamental question that we're asking, which is, What do the contracts say, and why is the BBG afraid and in violation of the law refusing to produce them?
And again, I understand that issue. What I'm trying to clarify for myself is whether you are at this point either suggesting, suspecting, or have evidence that in addition to reporting appearing directly on Radio TV Marti, that perhaps they were also being paid specifically for coverage that appeared in, you know, newspapers in Miami or in the United States, radio in Miami in the United States, you know, TV outlets in Miami, the United States, which would, I believe, would be, you know, a further development.
I think that's the question that's posed here. I mean,
okay.
That is a question at issue here. Whether or not there's going to be a contract that explicitly says that, I that's not necessarily what we would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But whether or not that is in fact the reality of the situation, that is possible, because in fact you have a substantial number of reporters in Miami who are receiving money from the BBG, not necessarily specifically for appearing on TV or Radio Marti, which, though Gloria rightly points out, is more of a Miami audience than a Cuba audience. It is, in fact, has a major domestic propaganda component. But putting even that aside, these reporters are receiving money and carrying out domestic reporting, quote-unquote, and domestic publication. And that's what we want to know. We want to be able to uncover these records and be able to find out from the BBG, from these records and the broader FOIA request, exactly what the breadth is of their funding of these reporters in Miami and the activities of these reporters in Miami.
One thing we'd like to point out is that at one point in our request to the BBG, they said that we would have to pay a very large amount of money, which we do not have. And part of the lawsuit explains in detail the waiver for a group like ourselves, and also that the BBG went past the deadline and they are required to give us the information regardless of our ability to pay. And so I don't know if Mara wants to talk about that, but the lawsuit is available on our website, freethefive.org, and the 2006 article from Oscar Corral is on there, and we will have more information, including the listing of some of these journalists and what they received.
Well, I think we don't need to get into all of that unless people have specific questions, or anyone can call follow-up questions. Just to clarify what Gloria is saying, the Free the Five Committee also sought a fee waiver for the overall FOIA demand, which in fact has come about because under the law it was not denied within the time frame. They were obliged to deny it, and furthermore, the Free the Five Committee qualifies for the fee waiver. But specifically, Free the Five said that with regard to these specific contracts that we're suing about and that they want access to, they said they would actually pay whatever the asserted fees were to get these specific contracts. They would pay it under protest and challenge the payment, but they wanted the contracts. And BBG still refuses to tell them to either produce the contracts or tell them what it would cost to get the contracts. They're just withholding them. They've told them they have to pay more than $30,000 for the breadth of the entire FOIA, which they're challenging. But on these contracts alone, they won't give it to them, nor would they even tell them what it would cost to get them. They just don't want to produce them.
Thank you very much to the media and to Mara for Hayden and to our operator. Thank you.